The Hunting Collective is presented by Element.
I guess I grew up on an older road.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 157, Phil?
Six.
Damn it.
All so right, close.
156. Cut that out. 156 of the Hunting Collective. I'm Ben O'Brien, and you've heard the voice, the lovely velvet voice of Phil T. Engineer. What's going on over there?
Oh, not much. I think we've got some more snow rolling in. Are you excited?
It is, yeah. Not really.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. I'm going to take up skiing this year, for sure.
See, I've been saying that as well. Maybe we should go together.
Yeah, maybe we should hit the slopes together. Is that what they say?
Yeah.
The kids say, shred some gnar together.
Yeah.
I think that's what the kids say. I'll do it. I mean, I've skied a few times in my life, but never been very serious. But now that I live basically right next to a ski resort, I feel like, why the hell am I not doing it? Something to do in the wintertime besides ice fishing, which, let's be honest, is boring as hell. All right, to begin the show here, we got Giannis Patelis, Ask the Eagle, one of our most popular shows that we do. And we bring on Giannis the Eagle Patelis, and we let you guys call in and ask him and me questions. We had a bunch of good ones this time around. Had a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, learned a lot of things. I was able to actually describe a gentleman's deer skinning setup without ever meeting him because he's from Pennsylvania and I grew up near there and I know how it is. So stay tuned for that. I always enjoy having Yanni. And we were actually back in the studio, which I will tell you made me quite happy to be around other humans. It was great. It was great. So to begin this, Phil, Joshua Butler wrote in. He said pine tree, lavender, and sarlacc pit. Are those your candle flavors? We had a lot of people guessing your candle flavors. Are they flavors or scents?
They're scents. I do not eat the candles.
Don't eat them.
Don't eat the candles. They do not taste as them. Good as they smell. First off, pine, yes. Love to fill my house with that woody pine smell. Lavender, no, but I do love lavender. It's one of my favorite candles. When it's not the holiday season, it's a great, just the classic relaxing scent. It's always a go-to.
This might be the lowest moment of the show ever.
And sarlacc pit, I have not smelled a sarlacc pit. I can't imagine that they smell good.
Most pits in general don't smell good.
Nope. I've never. Ben, do you know what a sarlacc pit is?
No. I'm looking at. Oh, it's a Star Wars thing. I thought. Get the fuck out of here. I just Googled it. It's a Star Wars thing. It's the thing that Han Solo falls into, right?
Well, Boba Fett falls into it. And hold on. Spoilers for The Mandalorian. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Boba Fett gets out of the Sarlacc pit. He's in The Mandalorian on Disney Plus right now.
He gets out of there?
He gets out of
there. No one can die in the writer's world.
Exactly.
Star Wars. They just write him right back into existence.
I know.
Some more action figures. Sarlacc pit. I didn't know. I thought that was some kind of candle. So now,
nope.
Color me. Two weeks in a row, I've been made to look stupid. Maybe not. Maybe every week in a row. I'm not real sure about that. All right, moving on. I really had no idea what that was. I should have known it was Star Wars. This hunting podcast is no longer even remotely about hunting. We are gone. It's gone. We're off the rails.
I apologize on Ben's behalf for including me.
No. The listeners are going along with it, which I like. I mean, I like that they're doing that. All right, Phil, we have to move to a bit of breaking news and maybe a controversy.
On this show?
Yeah. Yes. We have listener Greg Morse. You know Greg from the Great American Outdoors Contest. He's the one that made you laugh by prank calling Onyx and asking if you could see where the deer are.
That was great.
And also prank calling First Light. So that got him a winning prize. Now, it took us a long time to get him First Light gear, admittedly, but he finally got it. And he wrote me an email that says, "Thanks again so much for the gear. I got it last week and have been using it when I can get out. I really appreciate you guys hooking me up. I can't do much, but here is my thanks to you, Ben." And then this video.
Hello, Mr. O'Brien and First Light. I just want to say that I'm very, very appreciative of all the gear that you sent me for winning the Great American Outdoors Act competition. Honestly, I was expecting just like a few things, but you guys gave me so much freaking gear. It's awesome. I used it the other day. It was awesome. It was in the middle of that rain snowstorm. My old pants, like by the time of it, my chrom would turn into pipi-caca. So it was awesome. They kept me warm. I was dry. Didn't rock a Melvin the whole day. So just as a thank you, to return the favor, to Ben for doing that for me as a proud member of the cult, our dear leader, I just wanted to show you with my super skills that I have. So you got, you know, Thurgood Marshall, you got some good architects. And then if you were to scroll down, look at that. Ben O'Brien, writer and editor. Right there, sandwiched in between old Mel Kiper counting down the draft picks and Scott Van Pelt running down the top 10. I think you're in good company.
So it's Greg Morris in his house thanking us, and then he shows us, as you heard in the video, that he went into the People from Maryland Wikipedia list and inserted my name under authors and journalists. To say that I feel like a real celebrity right now would be an understatement. Phil, I feel famous. How's your reaction to me finally making it after years and years of trying, finally making it on the People of Maryland Wikipedia page?
Well, I mean, at first I thought you were completely unqualified, but then I went to go look at the list and there are people on here I have never heard of. I don't know why I would or should have heard of them. So I'd say you belong here.
I belong here. I belong here. Now, when we first got this video, I didn't go to the People of Maryland page. I just assumed that I would be on there forever. I don't know much about Wikipedia. I'm not an expert. I just assumed that because Greg Morris felt compelled and other THC folks felt compelled to put me on there, that I would stay on there forever. I don't know. I don't know what could be a better vote of confidence for Wikipedia than that. But, Phil, they removed me, didn't they? They took me off.
You're gone.
What the hell, man? Now we have a controversy. Now, what do we have to do? What does the THC cult have to do to get me on there permanently? Do you know the rules of Wikipedia? Because now I'm determined to be on there beside folks like Pat Brown, Mark Davis, Marianne Givens. Who are these people? I deserve to be there.
Bronza Parks, who apparently was a boat builder.
Yeah, I have never built in a bow, but I've built a cult, and that deserves to be on the Wikipedia page. I have hunted, I have killed, I have eaten, I have done all the things that you need to do to be on a list of people from Maryland.
Yeah, killed and
Wikipedia
eaten.
Page. I don't know what else I have to do. I'm 35 years old. I deserve to be recognized for all my feats. And Greg Morris tried to do it. And he got denied by, you know, probably the liberal media or Trump or hypocrites in Silicon Valley, something like that. It was probably Paul Bashir. He probably went in there and removed me.
This goes all the way to the top.
It goes all the way to the top. And so I need THC to react to this with the full force of your might. And get me on for permanently the list of people from Maryland Wikipedia page. We must firebomb this page. All right. We won't bemoan this any longer. But let me just say, before we get to the Eagle, we got some other stuff to do. If you love me as much as I think you do, what do we have to do, Phil? If we just keep putting it in there for the rest of the time until they just get tired of removing it? You think it's a battle of... Just how long
just
can we
force.
Hold out?
Yeah.
To force that? Or is there, do we write a letter to Wikipedia?
You know, I don't know if the force method will work because I think Wikipedia, they have like algorithms to pick that stuff out. Like if someone is like repeatedly adding something that they don't want to be there, I think that just makes them more angry.
Well, can we apply?
I don't have a solution, man.
Well, what if we put something different behind the comma of my name that makes it seem more important?
Philanthropist.
That's right.
How many charities do you give to every year?
Oh, a couple, two, maybe three, at least.
There you go. Well, maybe just cult leader. Would that be? I mean, that's enough, right?
I think you had to put some stuff in front of it. Author, writer, editor, you know, journalist, hunter, cult leader, like at the end. That's kind of like the period to the sentence.
Well, see, I think you should lead with cult leader. I think that might bring you to the top.
Next thing I know, I get a Netflix documentary.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
All right. Now just play the jingle, Phil.
Work sharp, not so sharp moments, sharp so you don't have to be. Season two. Yeah.
Not so sharp moments. George Barlow wrote in. George, big fan of the show. George wrote a poem. Is this the first not so sharp poem, Phil, that we've ever had?
Man, there's been so many poems now, I don't remember what category they fall into, but it might be.
I'm going to write a fucking poem to Wikipedia.
There you go. Cult leader and poet, Ben O'Brien.
Oh, yeah. Poet, editor. Yep. Okay. George Barlow. 'Twas a few days past Christmas, and the ground was aglow with 22 inches of powdery snow. It was a great day for boarding, and the decision was tough, but instead of a snowboard, I grabbed my hunting stuff. I picked up my shotgun and was met at the door by Beasley, my faithful chocolate Labrador. I knew the Palouse Hills would be covered in snow, and I just knew where the pheasants were likely to go. I had to meet my brother. I couldn't be late. Out the door, I checked the mercury. It almost hit 8. Frigidly cold, but still well worth going. It was a blue sky day now, as the snow had stopped snowing. After a harrowing drive, we reached our destination. The dog bounded out, needing no invitation. At the first hawthorn thicket, he put up some birds. My brother shot the first and second, and I got the third. Then we hit the creek, which wasn't too wide. With a good solid leap, I could reach the other side. I unloaded my gun, checked it once and then twice. With the action still open, I leapt over water and ice. I landed across but continued to go. Before I knew it, I was lying face first in the snow. When I stood up, I found out, to my dissatisfaction, a great deal of snow had filled up my action. I used my finger to clear what I could, but there was snow up the barrel, and that wasn't good. Luckily, the snow was so light and fluffy, it would surely come out with a little huffy puffy.
Yeah, that was stretching it there.
Yeah, that was some clear and concise editing would help this. I'll just blow it out with some air from my mouth. I'll just blow it out with some air from my mouth. I'll just blow down the barrel, and that's when things headed south. I realized that this might not be my moment of glory, as I had flashbacks of Ralphie, a flagpole, and a Christmas story. My brain said don't do it, but the message was sent. It was traveling down my neurons. I couldn't repent. My lips hit the barrel, felt pain, and went numb. And I thought to myself, oh, damn, I feel dumb. With my lips firmly frozen to the end of the barrel, I couldn't shout or swear or sing Christmas carols. I knew then and there what couldn't be done. I threw open my mouth and left some lips on the gun. I'm not proud of that day or the events that took place, and the fact that I removed part of my lips from my face. But now I am wiser because I'm getting old. Advice to you youngsters, don't lick metal that's cold. Play the jingle, Phil!
Work sharp, not so sharp moments, sharp so you don't have to be. Season two! Yeah!
Amazing. Amazing, Phil. Amazing master poet, George Barlow.
Yeah, I thought that was going to go to a dark place when he said he knew what had to be done. And I was like, no, don't.
don't do it.
But luckily, I'm glad that he helped himself. I'm still laughing at Huffy Puffy. Just incredible. Incredible writing there.
Oh, George Barlow. Well done, sir. Well done. That matches my little ditty on the Meat Eater podcast Christmas special last year. and maybe even gets past it quite a bit. So thank you, George, and for this wonderful feat of poetry in the outdoor variety, you're going to receive a Worksharp field sharpener from our friends at Worksharp. Please keep sending in your not-so-sharp moments. We are going to do a contest in 2 weeks to give away some wonderful not-so-sharp moment gear from Worksharp. It's something that will sharpen a knife for you. We're going to, Phil and I are going to rank and then vote on the best not-so-sharp moments of the year a couple of weeks here in our last show of 2020. So stick around for that. And also, while you're at it, head on over to the Worksharp YouTube page for weekly sharpening tips, including yours truly from a couple of weeks ago. Keep them sharp for the holiday season with our friends at Worksharp. Man, that's a late entry, Phil, but that might make it into the top not-so-sharp moments of the year. Do you feel it has a chance?
Oh, yeah. It's got a shot, for sure.
It's got a real shot. It's got a shot to take the prize. So, George, if you're listening, get ready, buddy. You might be receiving some presents from your boys, THC. So we won't keep this much longer. We're going to keep it short today because we have the great and powerful Giannis Patelis, Ask the Eagle, all of your calls coming right at you. Enjoy. Giannis Patelis, it's good to see you, man.
What's up, Ben?
I haven't seen you in so long, other than on the Zoom or like actually on the YouTubes.
I thought we just did one of these.
But yeah,
how long has it been?
Yeah.
Has it been like a month, maybe?
More, way more. It was in October. It's December.
Oh, yeah, because we were talking about how bad your September
hunts were.
Archery season was.
Yeah, and then October got a little bit better, and then November, non-existent. It just didn't happen.
Mostly because of COVID, though.
Oh, yeah. 100% because of COVID. I got a day and a half in the breaks. Saw 100 deer in 2 days, not a mature buck amongst them. And then got the COVID. That was it. Mm. Haven't been out since. I still have the lung damage is still pretty.
You're still feeling it,
still
huh?
feeling it. I took my little son out to, we were building a fort out by the river. It was, you know, just as a cool thing to do, with a little fire in there or whatever. And the other times we've been there, it's easy to get to. But last time we went, I was like, we got home, I had to lay down and rest. Felt like an old man.
Dude.
I know. So I don't want to be a COVID alarmist or anything like that, but.
No, man, it's good to get people's stories out there. Because somehow, for some reason, there's plenty of people who I personally believe are being quite selfish with the way that they're treating the whole situation. Because they're looking at it only how it affects them and not, I don't know, man. I just look at it as like a patriotic thing.
I'm with you.
If we all just got to chip in and get her done.
Like, yeah, you know, World War II, you know, we, Rosie the Riveter. I feel like, you know, and when people that make it a civil liberties thing, I get you. I'm all civil liberties. I'm all for civil liberties. But I also drive on the right side of the road, even though I pay for the whole road. And I wear my seatbelt and I go to the speed limit.
Right. I like to bring up that argument with the speed limit. It's like, well, you follow the speed limit, don't you?
And that's
someone asking you to do that.
They're not, you know, they can ticket you for it. But really, what's the speed limit? The speed limit is to keep everyone safe. And to say, like, we all agree that this is a reasonable speed to go to keep everyone safe. And the other rule we have is don't be inebriated when you're doing when the driving. That's a rule. All those are public safety measures. That's all they are. And I think we've just politicized this particular public safety measure. That's not hard at all to do. It's not so easy. Philosophically, I get the argument, but just from a tangible daily life thing, how much it helps, I'm not a doctor, but if it helps a little bit, then it's worth it, I think. So as somebody who went through it, I mean, I definitely didn't get it at a rave or anything. I got it in the Missouri breaks, hunting with one other dude, you know. So my example's not great in that way, but... just in general, everybody's talking about it. It affects all our lives. And after I got COVID, I started thinking, like, what can I do for other people to make sure that they don't have to experience this? Because it wasn't just not fun. It was awful.
Yeah, you got it bad.
Yeah, I got, like, even the physical and mental issues that I've had, because I got really confused a lot after it. Had ringing in my ears and things like that. Still do. But just... what I saw my family have to go through, you know, just on the back end, because they all got it too. So
Yeah. Dude, I just got a email from my father-in-law who has an acquaintance, 57 years old, not even 60. And she and her husband got it. She passed away. He made it barely. 57.
It's like this, COVID's like a tornado. It just like goes into your town and like wrecks one house and pulls the shingles off another house and wrecks the next house down the street. And like, and then the, how we figure that out is because I had been taking zinc, vitamin D, a huge dose of vitamin D, as big as I could take, and a big dose of vitamin C for like 6 or 7 months to the point where I got COVID.
So you were just doing that just to be preventative.
Yeah. Just to just
abuse. You like it, vitamins.
I never take vitamins. I hate taking pills altogether, but I did for this because I felt like it was, I needed to boost my immune system and stay as healthy as I could.
Didn't help you none.
Didn't help me none at all. In fact, now I'm like vitamin D. Bullshit.
You gonna get vaccinated when it shows up?
I'm in the immunity.
He's thinking.
But I'm in the immunity thing. So I think just for, again, thinking about other people, I would.
Oh, but let's just say there's plenty for everybody.
If there's plenty for everybody, yeah, sure, you're fine. In. Oh, yeah. I mean, whatever. I
like to hear that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get one too as soon as I can.
But, dude, I certainly would understand if somebody said, I'm a little nervous about it. I'd be like, no, this is something to be nervous about. Like, it's not something just to go.
Well, yeah, I heard today that they had a couple folks that have allergies that got their shot yesterday in Great Britain. They had some bad precautions. So
vaccinations,
they're looking into
that. Vaccinations aren't a thing that fixes it for everyone. It's yet another measure to you know, take a step forward in how we fight it. But
yeah, hopefully get to herd immunity.
Get that. We got to get that herd immunity. Well, you know, screw you, COVID. We're moving on. Ask the Eagle. We're back. It's been a little while, and you've been out there ripping it up in the woods. And I don't even know like what the success. What's happened? Anything?
Well, my November had. Late October through November, I did have a couple skunkers. Mm. I did. I'll be honest with you.
Like full bad hunts that you didn't
see
much?
No.
Okay, good.
I had great hunts, enjoyed myself immensely. But if you're going to be like a YouTube commentator that's like, don't even bother watching it because they didn't shoot nothing, then you're going to be disappointed. But hopefully, you know, the people involved and just watching them do their thing. And I wouldn't even call them like, we didn't even really struggle. It just like didn't quite come together, you know, which happens a lot hunting.
That is
the
hunting.
The one tag I had, man, I passed like, I don't know, 30 or 40 bulls
on
in
your
the first
elk,
week.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you were there for a little bit.
I was there for
and then I went back for 4 days thinking, you know, it wouldn't be that hard.
You got it dialed in.
I didn't see an elk.
What?
In 4 days.
Weather or just you just...
Weather, pressure, you know.
When I was leaving, when I came and stopped in camp there for that one little morning, I was leaving, there was a dude checking in like a 380 bull right in town there.
That's what I was looking for. They're around and, you know, I keep telling everybody I'm not going to have a tag like that again for quite some time. So I had to give it my all to possibly come home. And I wasn't... I would have shot a much less than a 380, but like, you know... Even in those last 4 days, my goal was just to shoot a bigger one than I've ever had before, which is just 300-ish.
Yeah. So, I didn't know about that area in terms of trophy class, but
now you know.
After I saw two bulls and two backs of trucks, that was like, whoa, Yanni was, he was dialed in the right thing. And plus, when you just make a bet, man, like you just made a bet and I'm sticking to this. This is what I want.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-mm.
Nothing wrong with that at all.
What else? November, I was in Wisconsin, got to whitetail hunt with my dad during the rut. Super fun. He got a shot. I did not. I got very close. I drew back on a couple bucks, but just didn't come together for me. And then, I did go to Colorado, and I got to hunt fourth season in Colorado, which, number one, you don't get to do often. But this was even better because their season structure just changed, and so fourth season was roughly a week later than it's been for decades. I mean decades. So, like, everybody that got to hunt fourth season this past year and the next, whatever, 4 years, I guess, until the season structure changes again, is going to be hunting later than they ever have. You know, third season is going to be like what fourth season was. So it was really cool just to be able to like really witness full-on mule deer migration and mule deer rut.
I was going
to
say, like, where was the rut? Do you feel like it was on the later, on the nose?
Again, I had a lot of warm temps this fall, and we had them down there in Southern Colorado too. And during when it was cool, if it was cloudy, if it was early, if it was late, it was on. But it just got warm enough every day that it just put them to bed, you know, and they would just be bedded down. And even then, you'd get a buck stand up and go push a doe around here or there. But I just feel like had it been, instead of like hitting close to 60 every day, if it had only gotten like right at 40 every day, I think we just would have had deer on their feet all day long.
Yeah. So, are my 1.5 pre-COVID mule deer hunting days. There was deer everywhere, but it was 50 degrees. And I just thought, give me a cold snap and it's on. And then I got COVID, never got to go back. They had the cold snap, and I had more people send me bucks they shot in that area than I would even thought I would know people that even would go there. So I'm there in my COVID lockdown going, I could hunt alone. Nobody would get COVID from me if I never saw a person. So frustrating. But I'm glad you got that done. That was a nice buck.
Oh, it was dandy, man, especially for last day buck.
Hell yeah. Yeah, you know,
and again, I had made a bet, and I had let like a buck that was very close to that buck pass the day before. And so being in the last day, man, I was feeling the pressure.
Let me just say this. There's a certain courage and bravery that comes with filming a hunt, knowing you need and ultimately something for people to see, some excitement, but still holding out anyway.
Yeah.
So that's courageous, I would say. Because
there's a little bit of stupidity involved too.
That too. But, when I was just a writer back when I was working for magazines, there was the photo buck. Was this idea that if you got sent on a assignment story on a trip, that you needed to kill something to pay off the story, you would write in the magazine. So there's photo buck or photo bull in any case. Like if you saw something that was representative and you could kill it, you kind of had to.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that always changed the game, you know.
Oh, no, for sure, man. Filming stuff is, it complicates it, I should say.
Yep. Well, we got some Ask the Eagle. We got a lot of Ask the Eagle emails, so thank you for everybody that follows Giannis on social media. And I think we got over 100 emails from folks. Dang. A lot of good stuff. That means Ask the Eagle has plenty of material to continue into the future. So if we don't call you in the next hour, if you're out there and we haven't called you yet, we might be coming for you. So get ready. But we have 4 excellent questions and callers, and we're going to try to, as we do on the Ask the Eagle, reverse engineer the call-in show where we call the callers instead of them calling us. So let's try the first one here.
Hello, this is Trey.
Hey, Trey, Ben O'Brien, Giannis Patelis. How's it going, man?
Hey, what's up, guys?
So you're in Ohio, right? Is that right?
Yes, sir. I am in Ohio.
And you have a particular issue. I like this quite. I like what you wrote in. I like what you emailed in. Because I feel like there's a lot we can do with this. But say hi to Giannis, the Eagle Patelis.
What's up, Trey?
Hey, Yanni. How's it going, man?
What's your question, Trey?
As Ben said, I'm in Ohio. In 2018, just a little brief background, 2018, moved from Ohio to Colorado to live and work and just get involved in that lifestyle. Back in Ohio now, I have a job offer again to go to Colorado.
How long did you make it in Colorado the first stint?
About 2 years.
Huh. And then what, just a better job brought you back to Ohio?
Yeah, I'm a geologist, wanted to work in remediation, got the opportunity, jumped on it. So yeah, back in Ohio now.
I see.
I guess it's more of a request for advice than a formal question, but, I'm wondering whether it's worth the trade to uproot my life again. Move out west, that trade being lower cost of living, the Midwest has, versus somewhere like Colorado, for the hunting opportunities and lifestyle that the West provides.
This is a deep one. I like this one.
Yeah, it's tough, man.
Because I did it, and did I love it.
Yeah.
But
Denver's a tough one. Like, if you said you had a spot up in the mountains, I'd be like, go for it. But Denver, did you lived in Denver when you were there in 2018?
Yes, sir. That's the tough part. I was in Golden, and the cost of living is just, it's just up there.
If you like, like the breweries, and there's like Mount Evans is right there. There's a lot of good stuff right in there.
Yeah, but but just the amount of people.
A lot of people.
Like, I don't know how big of a town you live in Ohio, but man, Denver's like a big place, a lot of traffic. Not for me.
Yeah. You should start.
It is, man. It's,
where in Ohio are you? Don't have to give us your address, but like, where are you and what's it like there?
So I live outside of Columbus right now, but I grew up on a farm in southern Ohio. So, you know, we have a big 500 acre farm that I can hunt on there. You know, I live close to the airport here. You know, a lot of things I'm tossing around in my head about, you know, if I do have that lower cost of living here, it's a lot easier. I have a lot more resources to put towards hunting.
Are you well off enough? I imagine you are as a geologist.
That's a high paying. Yeah. That's like being a pitcher in the major leagues.
Oh, man. Wow, thanks for that.
That you can afford like an annual or maybe even a biannual trip out west to enjoy some hunting?
Yes, sir. Actually, in fact, I got to do a decent hunt this past year. So it's something I'm, you know, hoping biannual.
Yeah.
I mean, even those of us that live here, it's like Ben. Ben had COVID issues this year, so he didn't get as much hunting as he wanted to. And we obviously, because of our jobs, we get to hunt more than the average. But I bet the average guy that lives in Montana, he still only hunts out here a solid 14 days. You know, I mean, sure, maybe you get some more weekends thrown in, whatever. But like, if you can pull off like a solid archery elk hunt in September and then maybe whatever, come out for a ski vacation or come out to do some beaver trapping, whatever floats your boat.
Yep. Yeah.
It just depends on how much you need of it every year, you know? Because the two weeks of Western Rocky Mountain fun,
pretty good.
That might be all you need.
Pretty good. I do like that. And I've always had that in my own head too. That's why I like this question maybe so much, because it's helping me out too. Because you could have a nice little cabin out here. You save up, you know, get a little cabin in the middle of nowhere with some national, you know, on an acre with some national forest nearby. Have that be a little homestead, or just get a camper, whatever. And spend like the time in the West when you need to be here, you know, middle of September and early November, whatever, when you're not chasing whitetails.
And I'll go back to the Denver thing again. It's like when you're, if you're living, like I lived up in Eagle County when I lived in Colorado, and there it was literally out my back door. So when you have the free time, you're like, bam, you're in it. You know, you're loving it. But Denver, I mean, sure, there's foothills and this, that, and the other, but it's just not the same experience for me personally. You know, you're having to put in an hour, maybe two, three to get into the mountains and get away from people.
My brother lives in Westerville. Is that near you, Trey?
That's 10 minutes away.
Wow. Maybe you know him.
I should.
It's a cool, like, he enjoys living there. And there's big bucks close by. I'm sure you know
that,
Trey.
Big bucks.
Big bucks. Big old bucks. Yeah, man.
Right. And that's, you know, that's not to knock Ohio and the hunting in the East Coast. You know, it's something I would do even if I lived in the West. But I like the idea of a camper. That's something I hadn't really thought about. You know, that's a good idea. And like you said, you know, Denver is just, it's crazy. And even the hunting is crazy. You know, there's tons of people out when you go. So
they are. I think CPW is working on that. We hunted there in a unit that had been very, very crowded years past. And then they made the archery licenses, just went away from being over the counter to a limited amount. It was still a lot of licenses, but they basically made people choose, like, where are you going to hunt? You going to hunt here or hunt there? And that really, really helped. Like, we didn't see a tenth of the pressure that we had seen years past. So I think the CPW is working on, you know, spreading out that hunting pressure that people have been complaining about there for the last few years. But I don't know, man. I hope that helps. That's my take on it.
I mean, it's not a bad choice. If you had to pick one or the other, Denver's got some good, it's got some redeeming qualities. Red Rocks is cool. You know, Golden's has a cool little downtown. I've been hung out there a little bit, but only as a tourist. I've never tried to get around the commute times, place like that. So
yeah, I'd have to choose Denver just because I have family there if I was really pressed. But if I didn't have family,
but
there,
yeah, you have family.
I think I'd go with the 500-acre farm.
And Trey, you're married but no kids, right? You said.
Yes, sir. Married, no kids. That played a part in moving back in Denver too. You know,
yeah.
Want to be close to our family. Having kids here, hopefully within the next year or two.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Well, you know, don't be in a rush. Take your time. But yeah, also, I felt if you're in Denver and you were a single man, you'd have the prospects. But being married and wanting to start a family, small town life ain't bad for that. So, well, hopefully we helped you. At least I wish we had a camper sponsor because we might have sold a camper. But beyond that, anything we missed here? Anything we can do better?
No, man, nothing you missed. You know, I really appreciate the time, and you know, it's a. Sort of an impossible question, but I really appreciate the advice.
No, it's a fun one, and either way, you'll still be hunting, so there's no downside there.
Yeah, email us when you have a decision so we can follow up, let everybody know which way you decided to go.
Please.
I will. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
All right, Trey. Thanks for everything, man. Talk soon.
See ya.
Bye.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Well, we may have changed a life, Yanni. Do you feel kind of like Oprah-ish right now? A little bit?
Oh man, I'm not familiar with Oprah enough to know if I'm feeling Oprah-ish.
You don't. You gave something to somebody.
Yeah, I hope that it, you know, helped his decision making a little bit.
Have you been watching the Back 40? Have you got it? Yeah. Been busy. Have you watched it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keeping up with it.
Did you see the episode where we replayed your spritzing reaction?
No. You replayed that.
Yeah. Episode 3, we had Tony Peterson on with Mark Kenyon, and they were talking about how they were whitetail nerds, and like they were relating to each other via, oh, you're a nerd, I'm a nerd, it's great. And Mark brought up that, you know, you and Steve don't really understand the whitetail nerddom like those two gentlemen do. And then we replayed you laughing at Mark.
I think I understand it very well. Just okay, whether or not it's I want to partake in it.
And so we replayed the bit about you laughing hysterically when, I think hysterically is a good description.
No, that was a very genuine laugh when I saw him spray the camera down.
He touched the camera. So what happened was you guys were checking cameras while you're squirrel hunting.
Yeah.
And so he touched the camera and then removed. How did he even have a scent away spray? Did he have it like in his vest?
No, but you know what? I'm going to send him an FHF bear spray holster
that for his little scent spray.
Yeah, for his scent spray. So it's always on his belt. And he always has it.
You're a thoughtful guy. Yeah. I mean, I never even thought about where did he keep it? He's out hunting. Did he have a little spritzer?
No, I think he had a backpack and he had it in his backpack.
In his backpack. Okay.
Yeah, along with his cards and whatever else.
Whatever else he has in there. Flashcards.
No, it's camera cards.
Oh, it's camera cards. I thought maybe you carried like big buck flashcards. Tell me which one this is. So you laughed, Steve laughed, we all laughed, everybody laughed. And now we got a couple of emails from people that saw that. We have 3 different emails from people who saw that and wanted to know what was going on. So we're gonna call a gentleman named Mark, see what he had to say. We've kind of already addressed this question, but we're gonna dive deep into it here with Mark.
Hey, it's Mark.
Mark, Ben O'Brien, Giannis Patelis. How's it going?
What's up, Mark?
Good. How y'all doing?
Just living the dream, man. What are you doing?
Man, just excited to be talking to y'all.
Really? All right. Well, we're here answering questions, and Yanni's changing lives.
As always.
As always. Just getting it in. We know you had. We already kind of broached the topic of the Back 40, so just assuming that you've been watching the old Back 40.
Yes, I have been, for sure.
Okay, and you saw a scene there where Yanni was laughing at Mark. Take it from there.
Yeah. All right. So, in I think it was episode 3 of the Back 40, Yanni and Mark and Steve were out hunting squirrels and scouting out the land, and Mark decided to take it upon himself to use that time to grab some trail cam cards. And while he was buttoning up one of the cameras, he went ahead and sprayed the camera down with a scent cover, to which Yanni's reaction, which is classic, responding to that scene. Now, I don't know, Mark, as well as y'all do, obviously, he probably has some OCD tendencies, from what we can tell.
Correct.
But this obviously broaches a subject that, in my mind, where Giannis, you certainly viewed that as a line, an invisible line that was crossed, and that Mark maybe overplayed his hand there. And so it made me start thinking, like, okay, so maybe there is some threshold that you can use when you should or should not be using the scent cover. And what are those thresholds for, you know, practical and impractical uses? And yeah, that scene is just, a lot of what you do and say makes me laugh, but that one, when I first saw it, made me about fall out my chair when I watched it. So,
well, I think more than anything, he just caught me off guard, and it might have even been the sound, because it wasn't like a spritz sound; it was like a, psh, like it was aerosoled yeah. spray that he had in there, and it caught me off guard. You know, in that moment, you know, like you said, we're out there squirrel hunting, three dudes plus two camera operators. So we're laying down some mega scent, and we're all standing right next to this camera. And then to all of a sudden for him to like go next level, because he didn't want, you know, and I understand why he wants to do it, right? He like doesn't want that camera to smell like a human. And Mark and I, we actually did a Wired to Hunt podcast a couple days ago.
Oh.
And I was telling him about how I had a doe that I know didn't catch my wind, because I was so high in a tree, I was on a ridge, and my scent was blowing off this ridge. Yet, when she got to the base of that tree, she smelled something. And I think it was my climbing stick, you know? So maybe I should have taken, you know, Mark's little approach there. And when I put up that first climbing stick, you know, spray it down. And maybe it would have allowed her to at least pass by instead of spooking and going back the way that she came from, which may or may not have affected my hunt later.
Yeah.
But look, man, I'm no Joe Whitetail. Mark is. So he's got to answer the question about like the thresholds of, you know, how far you can take it. And I think, you know, I'll speak a little bit for Mark, because I've heard him say it a lot. You know, to him, if he does it all and it happens to help just a tenth of a percent, and it buys
right.
him
right.
a half a second or a second in the moment, he will do it and he will gladly take it. And he also tells me, which this kind of hits home more than anything else. He's like, look, the guys that I know that are successful every year at killing mature bucks, all of them take their scent control very seriously.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, maybe one day I'll get there. I hunted, you know, the whitetail rut this year for 7 days, and we bought some scent away spray. I think I quit spraying it about day three. But, we kept our boots outside. All of our exterior hunting yeah. garments were kept outside.
Right.
You know, I was trying to minimize, but again, we're hunting always with two people. And I just feel like I can spend more time thinking about my setup and to what the wind's going to be doing, yeah. and just spend more time. I got a lot more to dial in
yeah.
before I feel like the scent thing is going to really, really help me.
Yeah, there's two things here. One, I think this is, if you're a single species hunter like Mark seems to want to be, or is, he is, you have time to like dive into the minutia, because that's all you think sure. about. But if you're like the rest right. of us who like to get out and hit a squirrel up every now and then, like a nice waterfowl hunt, like the hunt elk. Like
maybe a mule deer. Martin doesn't even know there's another deer in our country called a mule deer.
They look the same. They, you know, they're from the same stock. So there's that part. Like, he has the time because that's all he's thinking about. I don't have, like, right. your mind has to be awash with other things when you're trying to move around and do different, have different pursuits. But also, that's a rabbit hole, man. Once you allow yourself to obsess over every minutia as part of your strategy to kill deer, you can obsess over any little thing. And like you just said, get yourself off track. Get yourself thinking about spritzing things and doing things that are helping a little, and you're not thinking enough about the things that are helping a lot. And so I don't think Mark does that, but I think if you're just a normal hunter out there and you want to obsess over something, there's some pitfalls. Is this helping Mark? Is this helping Mark?
Yeah, no, that was great. I was just, it really helps getting y'all's thought process behind that scene and what was going on. But yeah, and then getting into the details. No, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
I'll cap it off with this too. Making content and making entertainment, some friction can oftentimes be good.
Sure.
And it goes a long way. And, you know, people love, hearing Steve and I, you know, get after each other or whatever, have, you know, little discussions where we might not think the same way. And, cause if you don't do that, then it ends up having a very monotone feel and everybody's just agreeing with each other and it's not much fun.
Right. And not only friction, but I mean, Ben, in another episode, I was really kind of rooting for you to kind of get one of the first deer out of the back 40, and just seeing your reaction to Mark and being excited for him was really kind of a cool moment. Because I know you wanted to get a deer as much as Mark did, but when he ended up getting it and you recognizing how much hard work he put into that entire project was just really kind of a cool thing, that an opposite from the friction side of it, but really speaks to the community very well. And I think what y'all are trying to promote.
Yeah, I mean, to the point where, you know, we're going to rib each other, and I am the one who ribs Mark Kenyon more than anyone on the earth. I always say he has a tall man's body and a short man's face. And he accepts, he doesn't get mad at me for saying, do you think that, Yanni? He's very tall. He's like sneakily tall. When he walks in a room,
he's my
height. Yeah, he's six what?
Two?
Two or three? I mean, I guess I'm just maybe short. But when I first saw him on YouTube, I thought, well, he must be a short guy. When he walked in the room, he was 6'3". And I just think he has a short look to him. His face looks short. Like he would be a short man. So I give him all kinds of crap all the time. But he knows, and Yanni and Steve know that ultimately that, you know, what we're doing is supporting each other, you know, through, you wouldn't let anybody but your friend or somebody you know loves you and supports you, you know, talk to you like that, treat you like
that.
You know, so it's that understanding that helps it go. Well, Mark, thank you for watching all this stuff and hanging out with us. Thanks for asking questions. And this is one of my favorite scenes. And we did, I mean, when we wrote that episode, we were trying to figure out what would make that episode good with that squirrel hunt. We wanted to try to play up the fact that Mark just didn't understand why you would squirrel hunt in September and why you would.
Right. It was great.
It was real. He didn't want to, we had to force him to do it. So nothing prescribed about that. So thanks, Mark. We appreciate it, man. And have a good rest of the year and a good holiday.
All right. Y'all too. Thank you guys.
See you, Mark.
Bye.
The back 40's over, man. That's it.
I know. It's a little sad, huh?
A little bit.
Yeah. Is it public? Does everybody already know what the plan is?
Well, when's this coming out? Yeah. So by the time this comes out, people will know that we're donating the property to the National Deer Association, formerly the Quality Deer Management Association, that had merged.
Is it Alliance now?
Well, it was the National Deer Alliance. See, I can't. There's no way. It's National Deer Association. Because it was the Quality Deer Management Association and the National Deer Alliance. They merged to become the National Deer Association. See if you can get that straight. I think I just got it right. We are donating that property, the 64 acres, and all the accoutrement to the QDMA/NDA. And so we're real excited about it. There's a lot of content we're going to make there. And it was good, man. It was a good 2 years in the back 40. It's good. It was good to kind of have a place where we had to tell we were locked in, you know, because the shows that you've done with Steve and that you're doing Meat Eater Hunts, you can travel, different dynamics,
mm-hmm.
you know, different people, different characters come in. But with the back 40, it was like, you have this land and whatever Mark can do with it. And that was challenging, but in the end, it was cool to kind of track it all through a couple of years.
Yeah, there's pros to it too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know what you got every time.
Yeah, and then plus you have history with everything and history that you've all recorded throughout that time. And we ended up kind of wanting to do it longer, but felt like there were a whole lot of other cool things we could do. All right, so we're calling Chaz here. I think it's Chaz, Captain Chaz, by the by.
Ooh.
Hello.
Hey, is this Chaz or Chase? Well, how do you say C-H-A-S? I can never pronounce anybody's names.
Yeah, Chaz. Yeah, that's it.
That's good. I got it. Chaz, this is Ben O'Brien and Giannis Patelis. What's going on, man?
Hey, Ben. What's going on? Giannis, what's going on, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. We just noticed that it says captain in front of your name. What kind of captain are you?
What's up with that?
Captain. Yeah. So I'm a former U.S. Marine Corps captain. I flew F-18s in the Marine Corps. I just got out of the air or Marines, and I'm in the Air National Guard now. Still as a captain. Now I fly F-16s.
And you had offered to, in your email, be the pilot. Like, if we ever got like a meat eater private jet, that you would be the pilot. Is that right?
Oh man, talk about dream opportunity, dream experience, dream job, man. Yeah, if that ever happens, I'm your guy. Please don't lose my number.
All right. If anybody from the Churning Group's listening, hook up that plane.
So hold on, is that your just general plan that after you're done doing all this service, that you'll then just be you'll become a pilot in the private space?
Yeah. So in general, and what most guys do is when they get out of active duty and active service and they have a required number of hours built up flying the military aircraft, you'll then get out and be eligible or competitive to apply for major airlines, you know, all your major carriers for your airlines or private pilots, what have you. So that's what I'm doing now. So in the Air National Guard, I can have the opportunity to be a part-time military pilot and still fly for the airlines. Well, because of what's going on now, I don't have, you know, many places aren't accepting any applications at this time, just due to, you know, the obvious, you know, pandemic and so forth. So guys like me are having a hard time getting those kinds of jobs. Luckily we have the military as a backup, but, it's just scarce jobs in the pilot industry in general.
That's good.
Does anybody ever say the hell with commercial and just move up to Alaska and run a bush plane for a few years?
You know, I don't know personally anybody who's done that, but it's looking like it's looking more and more appealing as the months go by without a job.
Yeah, yeah, something you're forced to do.
As a guy that flies around some super badass planes really, really fast that do amazing things, when you know a guy or you look at the whole like bush pilot scene, what's your take on that? Like, because for a lot of people, like a bush pilot's kind of like very, very cool.
Oh, to me is the ultimate.
Yeah.
Bush pilot always has a cool mustache.
Does an F-16 pilot also look at a bush pilot, someone cool or what? Like, what's your take?
Or like a garbage truck driver. Like,
yeah, good question. You know, I never really thought about it too, like in detail, like, hey, what is the ranking level or like level of coolness that you are as a pilot? I mean, if you're not a fighter pilot, a bush pilot's the next coolest thing on the list, or it might even be cooler. I'm not sure. But I don't know of anybody personally who's done the job. The very few guys I've met who've done that stuff because we've taken the fighters up to Alaska. There's a lot of range space up in Alaska and Fairbanks that we've used. So that's the only time I've ever been to Alaska is doing that stuff. But we get to hang out with those guys sometimes because they're all over the place. And they're your blue collar, you know, your heroes of the sky. So I mean, they're very cool dudes.
I dig it. Yeah, I mean, that's good to hear because I really have a lot of heroes that are like mustachioed flannel wearing bush pilots. A lot of them. Like the guy who found Timothy Treadwell. I can't remember his name, but he's cool. Met him one time. But anyway, a lot of
skills. At least when I look at it, you know, the places we've been dropped off and picked up from. I'm always very impressed with what they're doing with those little planes.
Oh yeah, I was in Northwest Territories one time, and the float plane pilot was the, you know, he's like, oh yeah, we go back and forth, and we do this, we run this route, you know, 3-4 times a day, and we do that six months out of the year. I thought the danger of that person goes through on a daily basis is unbelievable, which I'm sure is the same for a fighter pilot, or much worse.
Those bush pilots are fearless. They have to be. I feel like.
Yeah, is there a level of fear in what you do? My brother-in-law runs fighter jets, but he seems like a pretty just level-headed dude. He never really talks about the feeling of getting up in the air like that.
You know, I'm sure everybody would tell you something different how they talk about it, but I mean, if you think about it, every time you go up, we're not just flying someplace, you know, point A to point B. We're not just flying the airplane. We're doing, you know, mission sets, running systems in the airplane, running weapon systems, and there's an objective every time you go up. So maybe if you actually sat back and thought about the big picture and what you're actually doing, maybe it would scare you a little bit more, but you're always so busy doing something that maybe you don't have time to be frightened by it all. But I mean, usually, you know, you're so well prepared to go out to do those things and you prepare long before and you brief and you think about it and you practice. So when you go do it, you're not really thinking about being scared. Maybe later you look back and go, oh man, maybe I should have been scared here, but not in the moment. You know what I mean?
Similar to podcasting.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
don't
well,
really that know. Was awesome, man. Thank you so much for calling in to tell us all about being a fighter pilot. And, yeah.
It's open. We can go down rabbit holes here.
Who's up next,
Ask the Eagle. No, we're gonna let Chaz on to ask this question. Now, I grew up in Maryland, not too far from Pennsylvania. Where in Pennsylvania are you, Chaz?
I'm from near Pittsburgh, so a little town called Latrobe. You guys might know it for Rolling Rock beer and Arnold Palmer.
Arnold Palmer, the beverage or the guy or both?
The Arnold Palmer, the guy.
Oh, okay.
I'm glad I now know how to pronounce that. Latrobe.
I've driven through there a few times, but never been.
No, how'd you say it, Chaz? You didn't say Latrobe. You said Latrobe.
So people who, and I get this almost every time, people who are from there typically say Latrobe. And if you're not from there, you say Latrobe. So I don't know if it's correct one way or the other, but that's, if someone's from there, they say it one way.
Yeah. You pick up your O's the way that folks from where I come from do. O's, you know, Oreo, Natty Bo. That's the classic East Coast draw, man.
Yep. Some would call it a Pittsburgh accent.
Yep, it's like, but it's Baltimore, yes, Pittsburgh. It's like that region. You know?
Coincidentally, I bought a 30 rack of the Rolling Rocks for our most recent elk hunting trip out to Eastern Montana, and
nice.
Yeah, well, they weren't a big hit. Two different people cracked one, and it must have been a long time since they had a Rolling Rock, and they went, is this stuff okay? And I'm like, yeah, you mean the skunkiness? Like, it's supposed to have like a little bit of, like, not quite Heineken, but it's got like a little micro skunk to it.
Yeah.
And it's anyways, more than half that rack is still at my house.
Chaz, if you ever come to Montana, it'll probably still be there.
Oh, no. I'll make sure it finds a home.
All right, we got to get to the actual questions here. We digress, but that's podcasting. You had a good question, Chaz. Fire away.
Okay, so I'm Pennsylvania whitetail hunting. My dad and I, we have a camp in northern Pennsylvania that we go up to, and we go down to the same spot almost every year. We walk from the road down into the woods, maybe like a mile down to sit near a river, the Clarion River to be specific. So it's not that far in. It takes us about an hour to walk down fully loaded with all our stuff. The terrain's not terrible, but it's not an easy, super easy walk in. It's not like what you guys do up in the mountains and everything else. I mean, you can't even compare it. But every time we shoot a deer, we gut it out and we drag the thing out, and it takes us, you know, almost the whole afternoon to do so. And especially because my dad's, you know, 72 years old, so I do all of that stuff. So when we both shoot one, which happened this past year, I do all of that, which I'm happy to do. But I've never skinned and quartered the animal in the woods to try and pack it out. I'm wondering, should I just be doing that and make my job slightly easier and carry it on my back rather than try and drag it through the woods? So if you were me, would you skin it, quarter it, pack it out, or would you drag it and take and then hang it back at your hunting camp to drain and everything before you skin it and quarter it? What do you think?
This is my childhood, so but I'm gonna let Yanni take the first crack.
100% yes. You should start skinning and quartering the field. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Man.
Listen, I think there's a place for dragging deer, and if it's mostly downhill or flat and it's not far, but what Chase just described, it sounds like it's uphill, a mile approximately. Man, back in the day, Nebraska, you couldn't actually quarter them. You had to check them in whole. And so I, a couple of times, had drags that had to go up and down a ridge and then back up to the road or something like that. And same thing. You're just like, you can't train for that. I mean, it is just like the workout of all workouts. You just got to strip down to the the base layer have like special gloves because you're going to be like, you know, holding that rack in 100 different positions by the time it's all over. And if you don't have like your rope system exactly dialed in, like, man, it is just so much work. And the way I look at it too is that, like, as long as you're going to keep it on the bone, I don't think you're really sacrificing too much by doing it in the field than waiting, you know, letting it hang for 2, 3, 4 days and then skinning and then quartering. Sure, you're going to get a little bit of dry crust on the outside that you're going to, you know, cut off and lose that meat. But I look at it like you're going to have to do that work at some point anyways. Like, you got your deer, get it done, you know?
Yeah.
And if you do it right and take your time, you do it nice and clean. Sure, you got to pack some game bags. But I mean, heck, a white-tailed deer can fit in just about a single game bag, maybe two. So you're not really packing that much extra with you. So yeah, I'm 100% with you. And I'd like to just add,
I'm going to present the counterpoint here
before,
in a minute.
Before Ben goes here, that Spencer Newharth, one of our local whitetail experts here Meat Eater, I told him he's got to give the whitetails a break because I think he's killed like 4 or 5 mature bucks this year. I'm like, don't you want to broaden your horizons?
He just shot a giant one.
A little bit.
He shot a giant one.
Yeah, he did. A really nice one. Probably drug it to the truck.
He probably did. Yeah, he had it.
But he had a post recently where he killed one somewhere and he decided to quarter it and pack it out on his back. And I believe the post said something along the lines of, I'm paraphrasing, but like, I will be doing this a lot more. I can't believe I haven't been doing this. Like, it's the way to go. And I see a lot. I watched a lot of deer hunting YouTube videos this summer in preparation because I was going to go hunt whitetails very seriously for the first time in a long time. So just to get fired up and see, you know, see tips and tricks. And I saw a lot of videos where guys were in 1 mile, maybe 2 miles, and they're leaving the deer to go get a cart or go get like a bunch of dudes to help them drag this deer. And I'm like, man, if I was there, I would have had that thing quartered into the truck before your first buddy got there to help you. Like, what's the point?
Well, you know, listen, I agree. I agree with Chaz.
Are you going to give me some tradition bullshit?
Yes. And I think a lot of people in Pennsylvania, Maryland, where I came from, you go through this progression. When I was a youngster, Yanni, just
I'm listening.
Just stick with me here. When I was a young man, we started hunting. I believe the progression was in the beginning we would drag the deer out by its antlers. One guy takes one side. One guy takes the other side. You generally would want to grab it down towards the base between the brow tine and where the main beam goes. And
what would you do if it was a doe?
By the legs. Then you grab by the legs. It's a little harder to grab.
Front legs.
Front legs.
Yep.
Each. And so you start that way. And we had a couple of instances where we literally dragged the deer so far, all the hair was gone on one side. Have you ever had that, Chaz, where you dragged it so far that all the hair was gone on one side?
Yep.
Yeah, everybody's...
Definitely.
We've all been there, except for Yanni.
Well, yeah, because where I grew up, it was, I guess we were always just hunting oaks. Yeah. And it just seems like you're always dragging them through 6 inches of oak leaves, and those things slide very well.
Yeah, we would be dragging deer through creeks, up and down hills, over ridges, through meadow. The longer you do it, the more you're just going to end up with, like, just hide on one side.
Yeah.
And that's not great. You don't feel great about what you've done to the meat or the deer when you hang it up and one side is mangled like that. You don't feel like that. So that's how we started. Because I'm going to get to the end goal of the traditional part here. And then we progress to the drag rope. Mm-hmm. And Chaz will probably know this too. There's a rope that has an orange harness on it, right?
I own one.
I own a couple. You put the harness over your shoulders and then tie that to... So you can either have one dude with one loop each on a shoulder or one guy with two loops on his shoulders. And then you drag the deer out that way. It's much easier. It's like it's a bit more of a compatible physical movement because you're not just dragging something. You're just running forward and the thing's behind you. And then you get to a log and you're like, son of a bitch. Any kind of impediment. So that we went to that next. And then we got smart and we got a cart. Now, you mentioned the going. We would, when we hunted like deep in public land for whitetails. We would take the cart in with us, put all our gear and packs on the cart, drag the cart in, cross a creek with the cart, stash the cart, put some leaves and shit, whatever, over, go up to our hunting spot, and then have a 300-yard walk down to get the cart when the deer was dead. And that revolutionized getting the deer out of the woods. And this is, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, revolutionized the O'Brien family getting the deer out of the woods system. And so I think we stayed with the cart for a long time. But again, if you're not walking on a trail, a cart's not fun either. Now you got to get wheels up over a log instead of just flopping a deer over there. But at the end of the day, the deer looks nice and pristine if it's, you know, lashed to a cart instead of drug through the timber. So that's where we got. And then eventually, I don't think growing up we ever quartered a deer out that I can remember. We always got it to the truck. And we had skinning parties in the garage at my house, and that was like the thing that I remember the most, hanging that deer up by the gambrels and skinning it out and drinking beer when I was old enough. And so it's having a deer
drinking Natty
like
Bow.
That. Drinking Natty Bow, Ostros, Natty Bows.
What's the bow in Natty?
Bohemian. Is that right? Yeah. We were just talking about that last episode. Is it Natural Bohemian? Yeah, that's what it is. National Bohemian.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
National Bohemian. I can't believe that there's a beer out there that I've never.
I think it's natural.
Is it natural? Yeah, I think it's natural.
Bohemian.
Bohemian.
I've never heard of it.
Never heard of it? Natty Bow. You got to get it. We got to do. We'll do an episode of Meat Eater Hunts out east.
Don't need to be East Coast to get it?
Yeah.
I guess so.
Yingling.
Yeah, I know.
As well.
Yingling.
You got to bootleg that to Montana, which I've done.
I had a keg of Yingling at my wedding.
You did?
In North Carolina.
Oh, man, we're getting off topic again. But anyway, hanging up a deer on a gambrel's in the garage with a tarp and a bunch of buckets for people to sit on and one guy skinning and everybody talking shit and it being like a party is so different than
man,
a bunch
of
quarters.
You just described like my entire hunting experience that I just did like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I could send you pictures of this exact thing happening.
Please do. Yeah, and there's buckets. You don't sit on chairs. You sit on buckets. Why? Because that's what's in the garage.
Yeah. Tarp in the garage.
Blue tarp. Yeah. Was the tarp blue?
How far after
it,
you skin?
It was blue.
See? I've never met Chaz in my life. I know everything about what he does over there.
Yeah. I think 99% of tarps sold are blue, guys.
Wow, there's green tarps and gray ones.
Hey, but how far, when you guys have a skinning party, what's the end result with the meat? Like, how far do you take the process?
Oh, you go down to just the bones, man. And you can also take it
you're pretty much butchering and wrapping your meat at that point.
Yeah, but basically. Mm-hmm.
So but you guys could just pivot just a little bit and kind of skip the skinning part on the gambrel and just have your table there and slap down four quarters and start chopping?
I'm going to let Chaz answer this too, but I think it's like gathering around a fire, right? That deer hanging is like something to gather around. It would be like...
A pile of meat no longer has that.
Yeah, it would be like lighting four candles or having one big campfire. And I just like to gather around a campfire. Does that make sense, Chaz?
I would agree. I would agree, especially if you're coming from a hunting camp with a bunch of guys up there who, after the first day, you can stand around, you know, admire your day's work and drink some beers and hang out with the boys. Like, that's kind of that's an experience in itself, which is enjoyable. And I guess you don't have that if you're just like, hey, man, check out my cooler full of deer. But
It's true. Yeah, I mean, I have in my garage now a butchering table.
I would say it's an experience.
Yeah, it really is.
You're right, Yanni.
No, from listen, a practical standpoint, you're right.
Yeah, you're just going to have to weigh how much you want to have that experience of that buck hanging there and everybody hanging around it and admiring it. Because I will say, like, a great memory of mine and a thing that we still do every year in Wisconsin – the years that we do, you know, kill some deer, but there's a meat pole and it's like a great picture when you look back on it and you're like, oh my God, remember 17? We killed four bucks and eight does over the weekend. Like, that was great. And there's the whole group of people standing in front of it. Everybody that attended that, you know, that year. So yeah, there's something beautiful about a buck on a meat pole. Or just a deer, you know, hanging off a meat pole. But you just have to decide, you have to weigh. Do you want to go through that pain of dragging it uphill a mile to get that 5 or 10 minutes of hanging around admiring it.
Yeah, my house, we would often take the back straps off first, and they would go in and be like frying them up in the kitchen while the rest of the work was done. And by the time you were done, you had a nice like little snack, little mm-hmm. thing. So I just have such fond. I remember like hunting as a kid was more about that skinning party than it was about the hunting itself. So hopefully that helps, Chaz. I feel like if you want to be practical and pragmatic, then you go with Yanni. And if you want to, you know, you be emotional and traditional, then you go with me. Does that help?
I'm at least trying it Yanni's way once, because making multiple trips to go get all to take off all your heavy clothes to come back down to drag a deer out, then another trip down to get another deer. I mean, I'm doing it. I think I'm going to try it the Giannis way. So, and if it's not sentimental enough for me, I'll go back to it. But I'm at least going to try it. So thanks very much. Thanks for the input. I'm gonna change my ways.
Send me a picture of a bunch of dudes on buckets sitting around a single quarter hanging from the rafters in your garage. Maybe it works. We never know. Best both worlds. All right. Thanks, Chaz. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks for the call, Chaz.
Good guys. Thanks for having me on. Much appreciated.
See ya. That was a good one. I like that one, Yanni. I feel like that we all learned something about each other.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So I don't even have the opportunity to pack a deer out like that anymore, which is kind of sad for me.
I was such a dragger when I came to Colorado, and my first fall ever up at Pack Country Outfitters up there in Yampa. My buddy Jimmy had shown up, who was a previous guide. He didn't guide anymore, but he showed up. He had a cow tag, a muzzleloader cow tag. So, you know, I'd only showed up there in August. So I was very new to this place and these people. And he shoots a cow, guts it, leaves it up on the hill, comes back. We kind of like have dinner, put the clients to the bed, and we got to go get this cow. And, He, along with everybody else, is thinking, well, we'll just run up there with, you know, frame packs and we'll quarter it out and walk down off the hill. I'm like, hold on. It's just right up on this hill behind camp.
Just drag it.
You know what we do in Michigan? Just tie a rope to it. And because what we would do with the doe is actually take the front legs and kind of make like and put them together with the head and neck. Because if you don't do that, you got the heads kind of flopping everywhere and getting caught on everything, you know?
Yep,
we'd make a little bundle. And I'm like, Jimmy, how big is this cow? Oh, not a great big cow. I'm like, all right, yeah, no problem. Let's go. Dude, I mean, that was just a full-on exercise. I mean, it was downhill the whole way, but aspen logs everywhere. You know, it would get going too fast down the aspen leaves and take people out. We had a hell of a time. We laughed a lot and hooted a lot, but I can tell you that was the first and last elk drug off of a mountain out of that camp.
Yeah, I just, you know, even in my life now, as I'm trying to, you just moved to Montana, I'm trying to set up, like, how, when I kill something, what do I do, right? I got a big butchering table in my garage, stainless steel, and all the things I'll need there. And man, did I miss the gambrels this last couple of times I brought home quartered animals. I missed it. So this fall, I'm going to get some gambrels, like a three-pole, like, TP-looking gambrel system, and put it on the concrete pad on the side of my house. So in case... And I really, around Montana or wherever else I go, want to find places where I can get the whole animal out.
That's called private ranch hunting, Ben.
Oh, yeah. Is that right?
Because all you have to do is go down to Yellowstone Game Processing, which is right there at the exit when you're going to my house.
Yeah, I know that one. Yeah.
And hang out there for an hour or two, and they receive lots of whole elk.
Really?
Lots.
Like guys are wenching them into trucks and stuff?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really? Dude, that seems insane. The only time this has ever happened to me, I was actually the first elk I ever killed, I think, was over here, that's like a decade ago or 12 years ago by Lake Ennis. I was on a hunt. Shot a bull right by Lake Ennis, right before the public land there in a private ranch. And we were literally hiking up. It was my dream to hike up into the Madison Range and go hunt. I never had been to Montana before. It was my dream to go hunt in the Madison Range. We didn't even make it to the mountains. We were in some damn ag field overlooking the lake, and here stands a bull just by himself with a bunch of cattle. We went over there and shot him. Dude drives out. He's got a flat top pickup, and like it goes
flatbed.
Flatbed, yeah, flatbed. and he just gets his winch out and and drags this thing over there, puts it in his flatbed, and off we go. And I thought, you know, that wasn't what I was looking for experience wise. I'm glad I got this elk, but you know, this is what I would have done. Then we hung it up at some big pole barn and they skinned it, and then it was just, it didn't feel like the elk hunt that I was looking mm-hmm. for, the prototypical.
You're real picky. You want that for white-tailed deer, but you don't want that for elk.
You're right. See, and I like it going back to Ohio versus Denver. You know, it's a little bit of Ohio, a little bit of Denver
mm-hmm.
in there. A little bit of Colorado, a little bit of Ohio. All right, man. Well, I like Ask the Eagle. I feel like we're just going to keep...
Are we done? Is that it? Yeah, we have another call.
Yeah, we're done. Oh. That's it. We've hit that time, kids. We've got to go.
Yeah, that was fun. Those were good questions.
Those were. And I really do like Ask the Eagle. I think people out there like it. We've got another 100 emails to draw from. So if you didn't get it this time, if you didn't see Yanni's social post, then email us your question, thd@themedia.com, and label it Ask the Eagle. And we'll get it in the rotation for what it's going to be, a monthly affair here at the Hunting Collective.
Yeah.
Because I have fun doing it.
And remember, there are no stupid questions, but there are good ones and bad ones and stupid entertaining people. Ones and boring ones. So
that's right.
If you want to make it on here, think it through yep. a little bit.
As we say with Not So Sharp Moments, not too long, but not too short. Just the right length and the right intention.
You know what I was told in an email the other day? Steve, Giannis, Remy et al. So he's addressing you as well, Ben.
Sure.
His first sentence says, "As gentlemen that don't seem to value brevity in the spoken and written word, I hope you'll bear with me and endure the length of my email." That is a great way to kick off an email.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of like punching you in the face, but at the same time giving you a hug.
Which is how we treat each other.
Yeah. And so, like, obviously you're going to read his email.
Yeah. You're like, well, what's this guy got to say that's so damn important? Maybe we should have him on.
Yeah. He was, I don't know if it just took him a while to get through the Meteor podcast, but he had listened to the Meat Tree episodes and wanted to write in about that. I won't get into that. But I actually value brevity immensely.
Yes.
When I write, I'm one of those people that I take it to heart to try to never use the word very, because I figure that there, if you want to say very excited, there is a word that means in the English language that means very excited that you could use instead. But when it comes to producing television that we do, brevity is key. It's like if you have somebody that's long-winded and can't get a point out succinctly, it's going to make it tough to edit, man. And it just gets boring, you know? And you kind of like, you have to realize that you don't always get everything that you want, but it's more important, more valuable just to have stuff clipping along, moving along. And
yeah.
So, I mean, anyways.
Being able to say what you mean in a podcast sense, we just like to talk. And that's what this is. But in the written word, being able to say what you mean without having to bemoan the fact, being able to clearly and concisely express your point, is a skill in the written word, but also in the TV show hunting world, where you're trying to explain something but you don't have a lot of time to do it, and you got to get right through it and move on to the next thing, and it's got it all, everything has to build on itself. So there's a lot in this world, but yeah, keep them short, keep them concise. Now you know what Yanni likes.
Brevity.
Now you know what he likes. And he's a stickler about who comes on and asks.
I'd even like to have a T-shirt that just says brevity.
But that's all it says.
That's all
it says. Just brevity, period. All right. Well, we're very, very happy, very, very, very happy to have you every time, Yanni.
Well, thanks, Ben. It's always a pleasure to be on, and appreciate all the folks writing in with their questions.
Oh, yeah. This is one of my favorite things we do, and we're going to keep doing it here at the Hunting Collective. Say bye, Giannis.
Ata! That's how you say bye in Latvian.
Oh, in Latvian? Ata! That's it. That's all. Another episode in the books, 156. I'll get the number right this time. Thank you to Giannis. Thank you to everybody that called in. Thanks for your service, Captain Chaz. It was great to hear from everybody. And to those folks that we did not get to,
including my good friend. And I want to read you an email from one of our, we did not get to a gentleman named Tim King who had a good story for us. We didn't get to him, so apologies to Tim King. And he emailed me, "Hey, you didn't call me. What's up, man?" And I said, "Oh, sorry. We just ran out of time. We had to vacate the studio." And his reply was, "That is really unfortunate. I was looking forward to talking with you guys. I even took some time off work and turned over a customer with a nice sale to a coworker. This is the closest I have come to meeting a hero. And the old saying reigns true, I guess. Don't try and meet them. You will end up disappointed. Thanks for all the content during these trying times. Everyone appreciates it. Ex-cult follower, Tim K." So we lost a guy. We lost somebody, Phil. I replied to him and just said, "Tim, I feel deeply responsible to make this up to you. So in time, I will. Until then, be your own hero. I'll keep the Kool-Aid on ice until you return. Best, Ben O'Brien." So, Tim, if you're listening, maybe you're not listening because we've upset you so much, we apologize. We will make it up to you on the next Ask the Eagle segment next time around. And everyone else that wrote in, the other over 100 people that wrote in with questions for us, we are going to do as many Ask the Eagle segments as we can do in 2021. So we have those in the hopper. So watch out for an email from me or a phone call from me to set it up for next time. So thank you for that. And next, we have two more shows, Phil, two more shows in 2021. And the first one is Clay Newcomb. We got Clay Newcomb coming up next week. Now, Clay is going to, you know, if folks haven't heard since the last time he's been on the show, he's joined Meat Eater. He's now a meat eater, a person who works at Meat Eater. And we're very, very, very happy to have Clay. Clay's a fantastic human. And so next year, we're going to have him on in a pretty regular cadence for a segment we call Guard the Gate. Guard the Gate is a segment that you're going to hear. And if you don't know about that, go and listen to his first appearance on the show, and you'll learn all about that. But you're going to be hearing a lot more from Clay, including next week where we talk about faith in the outdoors in depth. We're talking about guarding our pursuits from folks that would love to take it away. So we'll be here next week. Say bye, Phil.
Goodbye. Too long, 'cause I can't go a week without doing wrong.